This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Oh, well, this is just, I am so excited. I have an author on today. As all of you know, I love poetry, and one of my very first guests was the Poet Laureate of the United States, Juan Felipe Herrera. So, I am so happy today to have a poet of such renown. I mean, she is getting famous, more famous all the time because her writing is brilliant, and she's going to be on stage with Erica Jong this coming Saturday. I am so thrilled to welcome to Joy on Paper, a brilliant poet, and I think just one of the nicest people I have ever talked to. And so we are going to just say, Kim, well, I almost said Kim from L.A., but she's right now, I believe that Kim is in somewhere. And Kim Dower is a poet that you really will want to read. Hi, Kim.
Patsy, that is so nice to hear. Thank you.
Whoa. You know, I love poetry, and your poetry is, well, you know, I think that poetry is so wonderful for people to read and to write because it's a fulfilling one of those things. When I named this program Joy on Paper, you have that joy when you see your words on paper, but particularly with poetry, because I think most people, when they write poems, they write it by hand, and there's something special in that connection. But to see your words come down on paper, and with you, in your case, you can take an everyday, any day experience and turn it into magic.
Oh, Patsy, thank you. You know, I think that's what poets do and what they try to do, is just really describe one moment that maybe other people wouldn't see as special, and kind of expand that moment. So that everything we see can be made into a poem, if you see it in a quirky way or as an experience. And I think you also said something about when we write things down by hand, it becomes more personal and closer to our feelings. Of course, then we need to get it on the computer or the typewriter, and we start to make it into a poem someone else can understand. But that initial writing down of thoughts is a very personal, wonderful experience for writers.
It's almost electrical, and I know that you're going to be with it. I can't believe, and just even to say her name is such a thrill to say. Erica, I mean, really, Erica Jong, you know, this is amazing. And I know that one of the things, words that she always uses about her work is the word blissful, because
yes,
for her,
yes,
it is such, she has definitely found the joy over all of these years. And you must be pretty thrilled that you're going to be in a show with her.
Well, I am thrilled. You know, we've been friends for many, many years. Our friendship began in through my business, which I think we're going to talk about later. But Erica Jong, for your audience, she started as a poet. A lot of us think of her as a novelist and Fear of Flying, of course, but Erica began as a poet and published two books of poetry before she ever published Fear of Flying. So Fruits and Vegetables, which is, you know, her first book, is still an iconic book of poems. And we did our whole book tour together, actually. We went to many cities together and read together. I think we complement one another, and it's a joy. It's always a joy to be with other poets when you're reading, because it gives listeners a chance to hear other voices, and poetry is so different. There's so many different voices now writing poetry, so it's exciting.
And it is exciting that poetry is coming back, because there was a time here where I thought, you know, maybe people didn't see the same joy that I did. And the saddest poem can still be joyful just from the fact that somebody has put those words into, you know, into something that we can feel, something that we can understand. And your poetry, you have, I mean, some of it's funny, some of it's silly, some of it's, very touching. And then, of course, some of it is painful. But that's what makes a great poet.
Well, thank you. I think that, who is it, John Berryman, who's a great poet, said a good poem should terrify and comfort, if you have both those elements. And I think it's true for fiction writers, short stories. I mean, if the work terrifies and comforts, I think it's done its job to bring out the different emotions. And funny and sad often go hand in hand. I mean, I see humor in the saddest things. I mean, maybe there's something wrong with me, but I just think a lot of things are funny, and I guess it comes out in the work, so that's good.
Well, you know, we're teasing everyone here. Without further ado, what's the first poem that you want to read for us today?
Well, you know, you asked me to think about a poem to choose. My new book is called Sunbathing on Tyrone Power's Grave. And it's actually something I used to do when I first moved to L.A. because, you know, I was so happy I was in a warm climate after moving from New York. But, you know, there are a lot of poems in here that are very sad and some that are funny. And I thought I would choose a poem called Naming the Puppy, which is a very friendly poem. And we all love dogs, right?
Absolutely.
So this poem is dedicated to my son and his girlfriend who are now engaged. I just said that on radio show. It's called Naming the Puppy.
Okay.
They're young and in love, so they think of human names. Zoe, Ruby, Judy, like the name of a girl you'd sit next to in math. They move on to dog baby names. Lammy, girl, puppy. They like puppy, so for an hour, that's what she's called. Come here, puppy, they sing, her paws, pink, tender, slide across the room. Puppy's a sweet name, I tell them, but soon your puppy won't be a puppy. And when she hurtles through the park, her teeth locked onto a sloppy stick, a pit bull chasing her down, how'll it sound when you call puppy, puppy? Your voice is airy as frisbees floating across the grass. I watch the puppy lick my son's lips, nibble his girlfriend's nose, devour their faces as if they were made of sugar, devoted furball, all ears and eyes, eyes that have been on this earth before. By dinner time, her name is Gwen, a star's name, a nurse's, or what you'd call the middle child of a noisy family. I watch Gwen pour herself into their arms. There is no name for the way she loves them, no name for a sun that shines only for you.
Oh, When I hear poetry read, I always find my eyes closing, and it's almost like the words are just dancing, just beyond the eyelids, and it really is magical. And one of the things that I like to do, I tell people, so many people find comfort in both reading poetry, and then writing poetry. The wonderful thing about poetry, you don't have to, you know, I one time was talking to somebody about, you know, they mentioned I'd like to write poetry, and they said, but I'm not a very good writer, I don't know grammar, and I'm not great at spelling. I said, no, you missed the point. You like poetry.
Exactly.
And this person actually, when, you know, in a newspaper or in a magazine, if there was a poem, would stop and read the poem before the story, you know,
right.
And I said, well, but you like it. I said, well, why don't you just write? It doesn't matter. It doesn't, because poetry comes from your heart. And that's the important thing. And
Yes.
You know, it's just so wonderful when somebody will actually start writing. And you, of course, have been doing this. This is your fourth book of poetry published, right?
Right, correct.
And I love your titles. I love the titles of your poems and of your books, like Air Kissing on Mars and Last Train to the Missing Planet. And then, of course, in this book, the new book, you have wonderful, wonderful titles. I love them. And people, this is the nice thing about poetry. You can pick it up, you can put it down, then you can pick it up at any place and just take a few minutes. It calms you down. It makes you think. It makes you maybe breathe a sigh of relief, maybe laugh, maybe whatever. It doesn't take, you know, you don't have to sit and read the entire book at once, and you can just sort of scroll through the titles and say, which one do I want to read? Like, I like the title, What It Means When You Dream You Bought a Red Cadillac. I love the titles. And then people can just, you know, the Echo of Love, In the Moment, The Right Tool for the Job. And I like the one, Gwen is Scared of the Wooden Fish.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, you know, I love titles, Patsy. You've got that. And it always is a title that gets me to start the poem in a lot of ways. The title as a prompt. I use many titles as prompts. And they're fun. They're fun. And I can read In the Moment, if you would like. I think it explains for me what poetry is for me. It is about that moment that we don't think of. But you mentioned where I am. I'm in New York City right now in a hotel room here. But I grew up in New York City, but I moved to Los Angeles, and I didn't learn how to drive until I was 25 years old. And driving has always been semi-terrifying for me because, you know, I think when you're young and you learn in high school, it's different. And driving is crazy to me. So parking a car is a challenge, okay, if you can believe this. So I wrote a poem about it, and it's called In the Moment.
Wait just a minute. I want to just add, I really like this poem.
Okay. You what?
I really like this poem. One of my favorites.
Okay. All right. I just parallel parked exactly right for the first time ever. Maybe because I wasn't imagining a tsunami killing me on Sunday in Laguna, or thinking about my mother alone at home, or when I dropped the puppy off the patio. She was fine. I never recovered. Today, windows down, no radio, just sky, steering wheel, and my hands were one. And backing into the space, feeling my tires hug the curb, was a clean slide into home. That rare fit of perfection was upon me. And let me say right now, I didn't waste it.
This is what I mean about poetry. Isn't it delightful that you can take just a moment in time, something that you did, and turn it into an absolutely charming poem? I love it. I love it. And as a matter of fact, this book is dedicated to another poet who I admire very much, Thomas Lux. Of course, he passed away a few years ago, and I feel so bad that I didn't get to talk to him, because I will never forget. I love, you know, he is one of those poets that I think the New York Times or somebody said one of the 25 books you should read is his collection of poetry.
Yeah.
But there was one that he wrote and was. It reminded me, because you have a poem in the new book called Appliances, and he wrote a poem called Refrigerator.
Oh, Patsy, that's one of my favorite poems ever, Refrigerator 1947. I hope your listeners will look that up. You can find it online, Thomas Lux, Refrigerator 1947, and it's basically a poem about what he sees as a child in his refrigerator. And it's also a prompt I use in classes where I have students close their eyes, open the refrigerator when they were 8 or 9 years old, and just do an automatic write about what they see in that refrigerator. And what comes out is amazing. but it's a gorgeous poem.
It is. It's so funny. Now, people really, you have to look this up and read it, because I don't know when what year he wrote it, but I've read it, you know, years ago. I had read it years ago, and then over the years, he mentions in that poem, so the star of the poem is maraschino cherries.
Yes.
And every once in a while, I buy, because my mother would keep a jar of maraschino cherries, because she would use them for pineapple upside down cake. They would go in the center, you know. So when you turn the pineapple upside down cake, there was a cherry. Now, I have never eaten one, because I don't know, somehow I don't know why, but perhaps because they were like that, perhaps because they were I don't know, jewels or something, like they're like, yes, rubies, and I never could eat one. But the jar would be there, and we knew as kids that was for the pineapple upside down cake. That was it. And so it's funny, every once in a while I'll stop at, you know, someplace and order a milkshake, and they'll put one on top, but I still can't eat it. But I think about him. I think about that poem. Oh, and it's so funny that you use that in your classes, because that is one of my
yes,
absolute favorites.
I use it because it's so evocative. And it shows that the simplest things, that things we don't think of as being poetry, are in fact poetry. And one of the lines in that poem that is so beautiful is, he, just as you're describing, they were so special you wouldn't dare touch one. And he describes them, and he says they looked like strippers at a church social. One of my favorite lines.
And this is what I mean about poetry. You wrote in your new book, you have one about appliances, and so which is, I like very much, and I love the rockets, where you describe the legs of the rockets, the rocket dancers
at Radio City.
Yeah, as you know, I have seen it many times, but I had never thought of it in terms of a curtain of legs. And once you have that image in your head, anybody who ever goes to Radio City will think about that. That's sort of special, isn't it?
Yeah, that's nice. To have lines of other poets in your head when you see things, it's a beautiful thing. Poetry becomes very personal, you see. So we write what we see. We try to report the world in a way that hasn't been reported before. That's the job, I think, of a poet, to see something and write it down so that others can then identify it with themselves. Just as you now, when you see a maraschino cherry, you think of the lines Tom wrote in his poem. That poem becomes your poem. It becomes your life. And I think that's what the best poetry does. We can internalize it. We can keep it. When we need it, we have it. And it helps us to see things in new ways, really.
And, of course, as I said, with him particularly, now you studied with him?
I studied with him. He was my first poetry teacher ever at Emerson College many, many years ago. I walked into a class called Introduction to Creative Writing, and I lucked out. You know, I think that life, it's every timing and luck is so important. I mean, who knew that he was going to be this young teacher at Emerson College who knew I would take that class as an elective? And it changed my life. And I knew him for many, many years throughout his life. I went back and studied with him at the Palm Beach Poetry Festival, where you are in Florida. It's a great festival every year. It's called the Palm Beach Poetry Festival. He began it. I mean, he's one of the people who started it. And I studied with him there, and he was a huge influence on my work. And I dedicated this book to him, yes, because he passed away 2 years ago. And but anyone can look him up, Thomas Lux, L-U-X, and you can read his poetry online, you can buy his books, and your life will be enriched.
Absolutely. And now, do you have one more poem you want to read before we talk about something else?
I can read the poem I wrote for my father.
Oh, yes.
Thirst. This is a poem that sort of came through me. Some poems are harder, they take a while to get right, and some poems miraculously happen. This poem is called Thirst. My father never saw my house, though without his modest savings, we never could have bought it. My father didn't know his grandson past the age of 10, but today at 28, my boy has his eyes and many of his talents. My father died thirsty. We couldn't fill his needs. No one could. He had a big personality, my mother would say, sucked the air out of a room, needed you to pay attention to his every word, a wall of talk we wanted to jump over. My father could tell a good joke, do the accents, had the timing. Why wasn't that appreciated? He could sell anything, untangle a knot out of the most delicate chain. His stuff looked nice, his paintings framed. He'd serve pats of butter on a dish, restaurant style. Our people leave us and we let them go. They fade into the tapestry of the dead, an occasional memory slapping us in the face, tapping us on the shoulder, kissing the breeze by our cheek. We wait for the wind to blow these reminders like it did for me today, just now, in my garden that he never saw but would have loved, even though my roses are struggling, their white petals dropping. So thirsty they are, so ready for a drink.
Well, in all of your poetry, in so many of your poems, there's talk of your father, your grandfather, and your mother, and of course your son, and everyone. I want to tell people that read Kim's books. Just the new one, which I the minute I saw the title, I said I had to read that. Sunbathing on Tyrone Power's Grave. But the other ones, the other three, are just as good. And start with this one. Go out there and buy it, and find that moment in your life where you can just sit down in a chair and pick it up. And you will find a lot about Kim, but you'll also find out a lot about yourself as you're reading the poems. She makes you think, she makes you feel. And Kim, I just want to thank you so much for reading your poetry today. As I said, we're going to talk to you about your other, the other Kim. Kim has two hats here.
And, yes.
Your books of poetry are really remarkable. And so I just mentioned your website for poetry is?
Oh, it is www.kimdowerpoetry.com.
And also Kim is on Facebook, and you're posting things there about your tours and all that fun stuff. And people can go to that and find out more. But I just want to encourage everyone to get this book and just enjoy it.
And, thank you, Patsy. Okay. Really, thank you so much.
Okay. Well, now we're going to talk to Kim with the other hat on.
The other hat, yes.
Now we talk to Kim Dower, the businesswoman. That Kim from L.A. who is making a mark in the world of publicists. And partly because I can't stop talking about you. Because you are so good.
Patsy, thank you. You know, poets, as you know, we all know, poets need to supplement their income with other jobs. I was going to say real jobs, but, you know, I bite my tongue every time I say that. But, you know, there's most poets, we all know, have other jobs or careers. You know, if you're not teaching, you're doing something else. Of course, you know, William Carlos Williams was a pediatrician. And we can go down the line. What I've done for many, many years is I have a company called Kim from LA, and I represent authors and help them get publicity for their books. And I've had this company for a long time. I'm very proud of it. I've had some wonderful, wonderful clients along the way. And I feel that finally the publicity, Kim as a publicist and Kim as a poet, have come together. And I'm able to do both, and one sort of enhances the other. The experience really helps the other in my work. 'Cause you, honestly, you can't write poetry all the time, you know? And I love being an advocate for my writers and my clients and helping people get out there.
And you get material for your poems, because you get inspired by all of these people that you meet and that you work with and for. And I have mentioned to my listeners that I get at least a dozen books now a week, sometimes more. Big Ed in the control room, like, I'll look sometimes, I come into the studio and he's got this pile of books there waiting for me. I can immediately tell that you have sent me a book, because your, just even your, the envelope you use is distinctive. You have a massive label there that says Kim from LA, so I know. So which ones do I open first? Because all the rest are in plain brown envelopes. I don't know why. It's like they're sending me bad stuff or something. But they're all in, I mean, really, they're all so dull. They all, you know, pile up and pile up. But it doesn't matter. You could be at the bottom. You can be in the end. And I say, Kim from LA. And then I open it up. And I know it's going to be a book that I'm going to like. And there's a personal note from you, a comment, a little, you know, sticky, something to tell me that you like this book and you really want me to interview this author. Because every other one, all those brown envelope ones I get, I open them up and they have a standard, you know, 2-sheet or 1-sheet printed form thing about the author, you know, and that's it. And they never, you know, other than they'll send me an email that's also a form email. There's never any enthusiasm. I only have one lady. I have one woman from Penguin Random House, you know, and it's really, she is the only other really enthusiastic. And then one lady from Nashville who actually, you know, love the books that they're promoting. And you can, yeah. It's so, I had not realized, because, you know, when I started this program, first of all, I interviewed mostly people whose books I already owned. I didn't even know any publishers when I started. So I was just interviewing people. I looked at the books, you know, next to my comfy chair, and I said, well, I like that book. I remember my fourth interview with Douglas Brunt. And it was because his book was right there on the, you know, table next to my chair. I picked it up and I contacted him. And he's my fourth guest. So it was only gradually that, you know, the big people in New York started sending me books, and I get these books. But it's essentially this thing. I'd get a book and I'd get, you know, this form thing. And no real enthusiasm except from this lady in Nashville. There was one lady in New York who is really amazing too, but she works for Penguin, so she's not, you know, on her own. And you're on your own. You have to get out there and really promote your authors, and you do it.
Patsy, thank you. You know, that means as much to me as what you say about my poetry, because it's very important to me. Like I say, I've had the company, you know, over 30 years. And I have to be exuberant and passionate and enthusiastic about my authors, and I am, and I love them, and I do try to make it special. You know, listen, there used to be, when I started out, there was no email, and we would have to write personal notes and send them and get on the phone and pitch our clients, and that's a lost art, and a lot of, sadly, you know, younger publicists in New York and all over, they using the phone is not a normal thing, and it's difficult to connect unless you can have a personal relationship with people. So those days are fast for many reasons. We just don't have a chance to connect personally with a lot of the producers and a lot of the shows we connect with.
Well, so, but, you know what? This is the problem. As I said, I'm because this is my own program, I can pick anybody I want. I still sometimes I will just, you know, be reading an old book. And every once in a while, I call up an author and I say, well, you know, I'd like to interview you. And I called up one lady. It was so funny. And she's in Georgia. And I call her up. I said, I'd really like to interview you. And she said, why? I said, yeah. I like your books. And she said, I'm not writing anything now. I said, yeah, wow. That's okay. I like your book. Yeah. She said, I don't have any releases coming. And she kept arguing with me.
And well, she needs a media trainer.
Yeah, well, yeah, she
yeah,
was like,
really.
Yeah. But with you, I know that you're going to be enthusiastic. And of course, in turn, the ones that you have worked with, like Kristen Hannes, of course, she's been on my program a couple of times, Robert yeah. Crace a couple of times, Brad Meltzer, yeah. I don't know, I've had, you know, I've had so many of these, of the people who have worked with you and said such wonderful things about you, that it's really a thrill for me to get books from you.
Well, that's great. That's so great to hear. And yeah, I mean, I've worked with very big name authors who didn't start out being big name authors. You know, it takes a long time to get a following, and it's a fascinating business, really. But I've worked with best-selling authors. I also work with smaller authors and even self-published people when I feel there's something I can do for them and their book resonates. And I also help them to get ready for interviews, because as good as we can be, everyone can get some help prior to doing an interview, especially on the phone, a radio interview. So I love doing the media training, which, you know, I don't tell people what to say, but I tell them certain ways to be enthusiastic, exuberant, ways to connect with the audience, because this is what's important. You know, these interviews are entertainment first. You know, we're not telling people how to live their lives. We're not brain surgeons, or though some of my clients have been. But if it's a fiction book, if it's novel, it's entertaining. And if the interview isn't entertaining and the author isn't entertaining, people tune out, really. So the idea is to connect with your audience. What am I writing about that you might be interested in? How can it help your life? How can it enrich you? That's what this is all about. And people need to have their personality come out on these interviews. You know, writers spend their lives in a room writing. You know, and it's very different to talk about your work than to write your work. These are two opposite parts of the brain. They're opposite parts of a personality. So you need a little touch-up before you get out there and talk about your book.
And you certainly give it to your authors. And, you know, I have so many... You know, I talk to so many famous authors, and some. The funny thing is, because I don't read those questions that people send me, and I just talk right. to them. And in most cases, for example, I will get an author, and I've already read. You know, for years I've been reading their books, and I know their books so well. As a matter of fact, one very famous author, I had read all her books for 28 years, I think, and I'd been reading them as long as I could remember. And so when she was on, and I thought I was going to be very clever and use the first three lines from three of her books, and she didn't remember. she had read them 30 years ago, but she was, and also she wasn't expecting it, because, you know, most people stick to the same thing over and over. So many interviews stick to the same thing over
right.
and over, and so you get bored with it, and that's why I bounce around, you know, and of course, because I do have sort of, as my only claim to fame before I started this radio program, was that I had read 10,000 books, and I have a pretty good memory. And so, like,
yeah.
when things came up, when I was reading, you know, when I'm reading your new book, I can pull out, you know, when I've got to appliances, when I thought of appliances, I thought of Thomas Luck's refrigerator. It was like,
right.
you know, I have this connection, and that's part of the fun of doing, you know, this radio program, that I have this sort of massive background in reading, which finally came of use because for years I kept buying books, and everywhere we went, all over. I lived in England for a number of years, which is a really terrible place for a person to live if they love books, because there are so many old bookstores. And I was they all knew me. They'd all say, she's coming, the American's coming. And it's funny, when you had red Cadillac, I had a white Cadillac in England.
England. That must have been cool.
Oh, it was. It was. I bought a 400-year-old cottage in England. I was born in northern Michigan, and my dream was, all I wanted to do as from childhood on, I was saving my money so that I could move to England and live near Jane Austen's home. And so when I was 21 years old, I had enough money. I went and I bought a 400-year-old cottage not far from her home. And then later on, I got a white Cadillac because I really couldn't drive British cars.
Just like Jane Austen would have had.
Yeah, I couldn't drive a British car. Anyway, it's absolutely wonderful thing to do, to drive a white Cadillac in Europe. Everybody notices you. Especially in England, because it's very funny, you know, when you're driving on the left side and all the big lorries, the trucks are sitting on the right side. So the truck drivers are looking right down at you. And I would get all these truck drivers driving, you know, slowing their trucks down so they could drive with me and looking at me.
It sounds like a poem.
Yeah, it was absolutely hilarious. But, you know, so I have this and I kept buying the books, and I got finally to Texas and we had, 10,000 books. My husband said, do you really need all of them? I said, well. So I gave away the paperbacks. He thought I was getting rid of books, but actually I was going to use the money to. I actually donated them. But I intended, when I got to Florida, to just buy the hardbacks, because I really prefer hardbacks. So, you know, this is the fun thing. And that's why I like getting things from you, because I know that you're enthusiastic about your authors. You care about them. You want them. As you said, you start, you know, oftentimes when they're not famous, and just move along with them. And I think that is also a very rewarding career that you've selected.
Well, it is rewarding. It's rewarding to see someone who spent a long time writing, who cares about what they've written, help them get the word out there. Because it's not easy to, there's a lot of books and a lot of authors and a lot of competition, but if they have a voice and people can connect with them and their work, that's exciting. You know, we're not talking about everybody being a best-selling author, but talking about at least having the chance to get your work out there on some platform and feel that it resonates with readers is very, it's wonderful for my clients, and it's good for me to know that I help them do this. So I am proud of it, and I'm happy that I have this wonderful company.
And that you are doing such wonderful work. I just want to add that, and, you know, I really love Kristen Hannah. She was on a couple of times, and she says about you, I'm going to read it because it's so nice. Quite simply, I adore her. She is enthusiastic, hardworking, innovative, and willing to pull out all the stops to help her clients. So, you know, when you have somebody like her, and of course Robert Crace, and you know, Dori Weintraub, who says you're the hardest working freelance publicist out there, and they're right, because now I'm able to judge, because of what I get and the massive number of books I'm getting, that I really see that you stand out from the crowd. And in this business, it's just, authors have to stand out from the crowd. They have to brand their names. They have to be out there. And they need a publicist like you who really cares about them. And it's not just a form letter. It's not just a form email. Your emails are enthusiastic. Your envelopes are enthusiastic. You're the only one who's got enthusiastic envelopes. And it makes a difference when somebody like me get so many. I mean, I have so many. It, like, if I don't come into the studio for a few days, when I get here, there's tons, and some I get at my home from people who once had my home address, and they still send them there. Yours are always the first ones that I open.
Well, I love to hear that. And yeah, I mean, the idea, of course, in life now, everything we do, we need to stand out. And the whole social media situation is driving us all crazy. And again, I can't emphasize enough that sometimes a simple handwritten note these days makes you stand out more than any social media post, because we are getting dizzy reading them all. But I love, you know, I want to bring back the handwritten notes. Anyway, I try to think of ways that not only I can stand out to wonderful talk show people like yourself, but also help my authors stand out when they get on your shows. So it is fun. It's a lot of fun. And then in the middle of the day, I can go off and write a poem somewhere and sort of, you know, separate. It's my form of meditation and getting in my own zone. And I can help my authors. So it's a beautiful, it's all come full circle. And I get to talk to some, I get to talk to you, Patsy, and you're so enthusiastic about it. And that really brings me a lot of joy. So,
well, that's what I want. I want so much to help authors. It's so difficult for them. As you mentioned, social media, authors are told nowadays, build your platform and just get out there and do it. And so many of them are really lost and sort of stumbling around, and they don't know what to do. And to have a publicist who can help them and who is enthusiastic, I think that's so important. So they get everything with you. They get the super enthusiasm, and then they also get to just know a poet, a real poet who is a really, I mean, you're getting noticed, and it's really exciting.
It is exciting. I do not do windows, though, Patty, so they don't get everything with me, but I will, and I won't walk their dogs either, but I think some publicists may do that. But anyway, listen, we all these days, we're kind of all flying blind, aren't we? We're trying to do what we can do to be noticed, be heard. But the main thing for your listeners, because they're writers, a lot of them, I have a feeling, is just to write. I mean, all of this, you know, getting heard and getting exposure and getting famous and getting bestseller, I mean, these things, they all really fall to the side. The idea is just keep doing your work, keep writing, keep reading, keep being inspired, keep seeing the world differently and telling about it. Everyone wants to tell their own story, and we all have a story to tell. And that's, I think, our jobs as writers. So all of this other stuff, it's great, it's exciting, but it's secondary, isn't it?
It is. Well, I just want to tell my listeners again that they can get the newest book, Sunbathing on Tyrone Power's Grave. It's available wherever books are sold. And you can also go to Kim Dower's webpage. But get her books. As I said, they will give you that moment that you need. Every once in a while, you'll pick it up and you'll say, ah, yes, I'm just having a moment to discover myself and to discover a great poet. So, Kim, where are you going to be on Saturday night?
So on Saturday in the afternoon, 4:00, for all you New York fans, this wonderful place, Poets House, which is all the way down downtown. It's called Poets House, and I'm reading with Erica Jong, as you've mentioned, and another wonderful poet named Francesca Bell. The three of us are going to be reading at 4:00 on Saturday. Oh. And I hope to see a lot of people there.
Okay.
You'll have a good time.
Okay. Well, again, Kim Dower, and she is from LA. So she's Kim from LA, and I want to thank you again so much for being on Joy on Paper today. Do you realize that I was supposed to have a commercial break at the bottom of the hour, and I said forget it? So I'm going to do a commercial.
Oh my God.
I don't care. I just was having too much fun talking to you. I'm going to do a commercial break right now, and then I'll come back and talk to my listeners. But I just want to say bye for now, and I will look forward to some more envelopes from you, okay?
Patsy, thank you for everything you do for writers everywhere. We all appreciate it so much.
Okay. Bye-bye
thank
now.
You.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay. We're going to do a commercial break. Okay. Let's do a commercial break.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
How many of you listening today yearn to write stories, poems, or novels? Each of you has a story to tell, or knows of a story that others would love to read, if only you could put the words on a page. The many writers' clubs in the Bay Area understand this urge and would welcome any new writer to learn with them. So go ahead and take the first step to becoming a well-known author. Sponsored by the Pinellas Writers Club.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I'm back for a few minutes before the end of the program. I again want to say that it was really a joy for me to talk to Kim Dower. She is a publicist and a poet, and her company is called Kim from LA. And she is an example of what all publicists should be like. Somebody who is enthusiastic, who never stops pushing her for her authors. She will send me the book, she'll send me a note, she'll send me emails, and she won't just do it for a release date of a book. So if you are working, if you've, you know, you have gotten to the point where your book is, first of all, before your book comes out, you have to be working with a publicist. If you're going to do it all yourself, you're probably going to have a lot of problems. But if you are going to do it all yourself, this is one of the things that, you know, I would be happy to get any emails from you and give you advice on some ideas that, you know, might help you. But when you're looking for a publicist, now you're not all, you know, going to be able to work with Kim because she is really busy. But be demanding. It's your money. It's your money. You are paying for the publicity. For a publicist to work with you for publicity. If you are doing that, then make sure that your publicist is somebody who is enthusiastic about your book and will do what needs to be done to get you out there. As I said, too many of them are just sending books, and that's it. And they don't really care if I interview people or not. And so which ones do you think I'm going to interview? The ones where a publicist really cares, because they tell me, you know, I love this book, and Patsy, have a look at it, and it works out. It works out so well that way. And there's a lot that can be done to publicize a book that many people don't think about, but somebody like Kim does. And when she does a book signing for one of her clients, she gets the people there. And that's the important thing, too. So, you know, again, I want to remind you. Hi. Oh, okay. are we talking, Ed? Ed, I wanted to ask you a question. Can you hear me? Have they raised in all, because you're a sports person, have they raised the basketball thing higher over the years? All basketball. You know, the basketball hoop thing?
Oh, no, it's always been 10 feet.
It's always 10 feet?
Yeah.
It's been 10 feet forever?
Yeah, it looks smaller because the players are getting taller.
Well, I don't think that's fair.
Why?
I mean, don't you think they should raise it?
Why? Then what happens to the guy that's only 5'10", 5'11"?
But how many are
5'10"? 8 foot.
You know, it's you know, I was thinking about what, because I'm thinking about Jackie Robinson, and I just did an interview with Sharon Robinson, which I'm going to play next week. And I'm thinking how I love baseball, and I just don't understand basketball because the thing is the same height. It seems to me it would be fair to, you know, raise it a few inches. It seems too easy. That's why they get so many points, 100 points or something like that.
Yeah, but that's why the tall guys get all the money.
Yeah? Well, I don't know. I think baseball is better. It's fairer, and you actually can see they're working both for themselves and the team at the same time. Don't you think?
Yeah, but like I said, if you raise it, then I think then you put a restraint. I mean, not everybody's over 7 foot.
When we played in high school, was it 10 feet in those days?
Yes.
It's always been 10 feet. No wonder I never got a basket in the thing.
Well, they call it regulation, so it's 10 foot in high school, college, and pros.
Huh. Well, no wonder. When you're half, you're only 5 feet, you can't. It's real hard to get it in. No, I think they should have. Well, I don't know. Basketball is a funny sport to me. It doesn't seem right somehow. Anyway, we'll be talking to Jackie Robinson's daughter next week. And right now, I just want to remind everyone that one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you're really, really lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into streaming video, a major motion picture, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel. Like, I hope, for Carol J. Perry, who is going to be here on September 24th and right here in the studio so we can talk about her newest book. She's such an exciting writer, and it's such a thrill always when she comes to visit the studio. But also, say something nice to somebody today, and I will say something nice to Big Ed. He had an awful week there with all of our problems with surges and power surges and lightning strikes, and he's done a great job and gotten us back online. Thank you, Ed. He's saluting me. I'm saluting him. And everybody have a great weekend. Bye-bye now.